This is RJ City, and you are listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Yordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Yordano Diablo.
And this week we are joined by co-host of the Cleveland America podcast, available on this here platform that you're listening to us right now, graphic designer, stand-up comedian, and man about town, okay pants.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Welcome, brother. Long time coming.
Seriously, the hate has been waiting to flow through me, along with the phlegm and whatever else is bouncing off these walls.
Well, you
right
know,
now.
It was only on Friday when I picked my parents up from the airport. About 3 hours before that, it was 65 degrees. When I picked them up at the airport, it was 40. So yeah,
that's a classic. That's the Cleveland classic.
Oh, yeah, dude. It ain't Hopkins if you're not going up and down.
No, I took the day for what it was. I took the 65 degree weather for what it was, and I knew it was going to bounce back to whatever the fuck it is now.
Yeah. Too cold is what it is now.
My
nipples are turgid.
As I can tell, Jeremy. Yeah. I don't even know what turgid means, but now I do.
I now know what it means. Well, I have a feeling I know what it means.
We here at Let the Hate Flow Through You pride ourselves on our educational programming. Today's vocabulary word is turgid, meaning stiff.
Mine are always, now knowing what that means, mine are always turgid. Mine have been turgid every day since I literally was like 19 years old. And I used to wear white shirts, and girls took no pause in giving me titty twisters.
Oh, yeah.
Which, like, led me to, like, PTSD from, like, a fat youth in grade school, where I'm like, I used to have titties, and I was a chubby Jewish kid. Don't do that.
Yeah. Oh, I can relate.
I don't like having them touched in any capacity as an adult.
Ties like that, too.
Yeah.
Like, ties, like... We, you know, we always did it as jokes, you know, like blah blah blah. And but Ty was like, "Don't." I don't like it.
It's not going to lead me to like shoot up a school, but I just don't. Yeah. Some dudes love having their nipples play with. I was like, stay the fuck away, bro.
Yeah,
let me play with yours.
Yeah, let's turn this around.
I don't like this.
Yeah,
this is just display only. This is the floor model, dude.
Did you ever have your titties grabbed in front of the entire school?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I was like I looked like, until the age of 14, I looked like Roger Ebert. Like, so like it's hard to explain that this used to look just like only a kid that got his titties grabbed and his love handles grabbed and just twisted in front of like everybody at school. Yeah. That's why I guess it's probably why I'm a comedian now.
I was gonna say that's why we're funny now though. Like that's what people don't understand about like the whole bullying thing is like, yeah, but without it I wouldn't be who I am.
Yeah, those coping mechanisms got driven into me real fucking hard early on in life.
It's important to learn how to disassociate before you're a teenager. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know, because, like, you know, like, there's a big, obviously, like, a mental health is, like, a very normalized thing to talk about, and girls always talk about dissociating, and I'm like, I don't even fucking know. And then, oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, like, all right, yeah, all right. I get it.
What were you... Oh.
Yeah, it's like how I spent 1992 through 1996. Yep.
Yeah. Good shit. So, okay, pants, why do you hate rage-baiting streamers?
Okay, so... And by the way, January in frigid temperatures is great to have me on to discuss the shit I hate.
Right.
Because it's ripe right now. Also, mind you, like this, it's hard for me to think of things that I hate because there's not a lot of things I hate. But I think this is born of just me clearly being on the internet too much, like I'm sure everyone else the fuck is.
Right.
But like, and maybe I think it's me growing out of aging as a comedian and a person where I just see TikTok videos, whatever, reels of just these broccoli-haired kids just walk up to people that are either working in retail environments or they just walk up to strangers in the mall and they immediately go for, they're not even trying to be funny. It's that I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you,
exactly.
I'm not touching you content. And I'm like, I'll be laying there asleep, like half asleep, watching this shit going. So when do I get to the one where someone actually dies?
Right. Yeah.
Like when do we get, like, it just, it's so rage bait just to lump it under streamer boy behavior or whatever. It's just so not in the interest of creating anything of value or even trying to make anybody laugh.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's
engagement. That's all it is.
It incenses me. It's engagement, and it's like, I grew up, I saw Tom Green be the first person to do this, and he was the funniest person to do it.
Right.
Because he was trying to be funny, and what you're left with now is like the fifth wave of Logan Paul and Jake Paul wannabes that are just begging to get beaten until they shit themselves in public, shitting out this content.
So, do you remember that very famous photo of a right-wing kid being, like, yelled at, and he's got this smug look on his face?
Yes.
That pretty much sums up what these kids are all about to me. It's just, they're just trying to get that really, really negative reaction that makes you look like an insane person.
And it's funny because, like, to me, if the shoe was on the other foot, and I don't really even want to go political with it, but it is, you know, 40 years ago, that same behavior coming from poor, disenfranchised younger people was just punk rock.
Yeah.
The crux of that was like, I fucking hate the way the establishment is. And then 40, 50 years later, the establishment is now just the trolls and sort of this lashing out. But I'm like, what are you lashing out at? You won.
Yeah.
You're the institution. There's no institution for you to lash out at.
It really isn't. And then there was a documentary that Larry Charles put out a while ago. He was one of the writers for Seinfeld and a couple other things. But one of the things that he looked at was this this YouTuber that basically, he was a young black kid that was basically going around and filming his crimes. And, like, he would steal somebody's cash register, like, out of a store and, like, say something, like, ridiculous and run out with it as, like, this is the future of prank comedy.
He wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
And to me, there's even, you know, like, even that, there's at least a brazenness. And I'm assuming he's, like, stealing a cash register from a Walmart or something. And there's the punching upness of that. To me, that I guess I could even justify that. I'm talking about how just in this day and age, troll culture has just become, well, you know, it's just, he's just trolling. I go, and again, I don't want to turn this into a political discussion. I go, he's just trolling. He's a government official. That's not his fucking job.
Right.
Like, it's like the job of like us to come up and try to provoke and do that stuff. It's not the job of the White House to put out memes and troll content.
No.
Did you see the shit that they did last week where they were, it was some kind of plaques they were putting up for each president, and he was writing the shit, dude. And one under Biden, it starts with Sleepy Joe.
Yeah.
And it's just like, dude, like this is on a plaque in the fucking White House in Washington.
Well, I guess we should have started at the top because this is clearly where it all started, right? Or at least this is where like the floodgates busted open.
The King troll.
Yeah, and I openly admit it, for as just fucking cartoonish of a fucking human being as he is, every once in a while, still does something where I'm like, oh, it's funny. Yeah. He doesn't even know why. It's funny, dude. Yeah, dude, you win. And that's the thing. That's the thing, too, is like all these guys think they're as funny as he is. And I'm like, no, man. Like, you sat around and let him make fun of your wife.
It's because he is who he is.
Yeah.
Like, you're not him.
He did, you know, if I'm going to give flowers on any of it, is like he did the most punk rock thing you could do, which was he got his feelings hurt by the president, the sitting president, and then he just decided that night, like fucking a Rocky movie, I'm gonna run for president, because he's like, fuck this guy, because this guy hurt my feelings. And then three or four years later, he's getting inaugurated. He goes, fuck, I didn't think this was gonna go this far, but now it's like,
yeah,
I might, you know, like I'm a narcissist and my ego won't let me you know, we're out this far out from shore on this thing. I just got to keep going and see how far it goes. And boy, has it gone far, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, has it gone far.
I mean, like, that's the, like, they, like, just saying, like, there are times where it's like, God, I don't want to laugh at, like, what you just did, but it's objectively funny.
It is. I'm sorry, you know, and I didn't, I guess I probably should have foreseen this turning into a talk about politics as much as I don't care to, but it is the thing where, I'm sorry, he does funny shit.
I mean, well, that's the thing is, like, when you don't get, like, somebody who truly doesn't give a fuck, they're always the funniest people, dude.
Sometimes. To my thesis, yes, like, when you literally have no, you know, he's a sociopath. Like, mm-hmm. He doesn't consider the consequences of anything he does. And yes, that's funny, but there's also just a lot of unfunny people in the world that have no, they don't have, they're like, if I just do this, I don't care what happens. Then it's kind of like, I mean, how many comedians have we seen take the stage? And just dudes that think they could do an open mic, and it's like, the longest 5 minutes of silence you've ever heard.
Right, and it's like, well, and the thing with open mics is like, dude, if that's what it's there for, go ahead and try.
Yeah.
But read the fucking room.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of people that are coming to do open mics for their first show, they don't have any skills. They can't write. They can't read a room.
Oh, my friends tell me I'm funny.
They did, but that's the thing. You don't know if it's funny until you actually do
right.
it. So, like, I don't fault them for being bad at it, because they're just like, I had a guy once come up to me, like, straight off the boat from Africa. His comedian name was The Blacker the Berry, The Sweeter the Juice. He told me that his comedy was top five. And
he just said that my comedy is top five.
Yes. That's it. Exactly like that. And
that's funny. No qualifier to what list, just top five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Might be stealing that one.
He bombed for 5 minutes. He said the N-word with a hard R more than anyone I have ever heard in my entire life. Antagonizing people about how he had these beautiful women with him, and they were just, well, I said what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got beat up by the owner of the place after the show. But that was just a magical 5 minutes of wonder for me. So I'm not mad that has a place to live, so I can have.
That's, yeah, like, look, and who the fuck am I? You know, I'm not Bill Burr to sit there and be like, oh, that guy sucked dick on stage, because it's like, I've, Lord knows, I've had my quiet evenings at mics, but it is a thing where it's like, you could. It is a fascinating thing to see a first timer that just, like, got talked up by his boys to hit the stage. And it's like watching, like, an MMA fight. It's like watching a dude do, like, a amateur MMA fight, and he doesn't know how hard a body shot is until he takes one.
Yeah.
And then when they let that first joke fly, and it's just the most deafening silence, you're like, oh, yeah, now, do you get it now?
Yeah.
Do you see, do you understand
mm-hmm.
the stupidity you've signed up for here and why you must love it?
The problem with, like, the online thing is you have a lot of that same energy of not having any idea how the fuck comedy works and then putting it out in front of an audience. But you don't have that instant feedback of somebody, of, like, silence letting you know that it's not funny when you're putting out something online like that.
That's the only reason, to be very honest. I mean, I've been fascinated by stand-up my whole life, but the only reason I ever actually started doing comedy was it just felt like the most pussy shit in the world to tweet out all day, and it's like, well, that didn't get any likes, but whatever. I didn't have to see anybody actually read that tweet and think how bad it was to my face. So then you start doing open mics because it's like, well, I approached it not to sound like a white knight, but it's like, I really want to see. I want to find out. Like, I want to see where I'm at, if I even love doing this. And so that's, like, to me, the only reason I've been able to do it for the few years I've been doing it seriously anymore. Because it's like, yeah, you just see, like, a lot of people, they pause right after the joke because they've never told it.
Right.
And they just think it's going to get showered upon them. And, like, you know, sometimes it does. Sometimes it's funny.
I mean, the first time I went up, I was lucky as fuck. But I had been working on those jokes, you know?
Yep.
And, like, Devin was hosting a mic at the time. And, like, he was like, just come on and do it. Like, come on, come on. So he just called me up, and I was, you know what, fuck it. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? And I did really well, and I think you saw me the next show I did. I think you saw me at my second show.
That is, God damn it. It's too many people. I saw their second show, and now I can't stop working with them.
That was, not to, again, this is going to sound like some Trump shit. The worst thing to happen to me was the first open mic I ever did back when All Saints was Redstone. Was I got, like, a lot of laughs. And it's like, was some of that genuinely people think it was funny? Sure. Was some of that because people kind of knew me and some people came? I didn't tell anybody I was doing it, but most people in that room knew me.
Yeah.
So is it charity laughs? Is it real? But it was definitely, as soon as, and I heard Ramon laugh once, and Ramon put me on the show. So as soon as I heard that, I go, oh, okay. I go, all right. And then it's like, I did it again and again, and then, of course, like, my second or third time out, I heard that. I let that same joke fly, and then you just hear, that it's like, noted, and then you just, like, fucking soldier through it, try to pick it back up again. But, yeah, it's, I think it all goes to, but stand up, even if you don't understand why you're doing it, that's a platform to, you have to try to be funny. And in rage bait culture and whatever the internet, whatever content culture is in troll culture, you're not trying to be funny most of the time. You're trying to impress your buddy Dylan, who you go to prep school with, you know, and you guys got kicked out of the same Chipotle, so now you have to go to the Chipotle of the neighborhood over and bother the Walmart employees over there.
Yeah, that's...
I hate white children is what I'm trying to say.
We should have never given these children money and video cameras.
We should have never given children the internet. That's really what it comes down to, because I think that's what it's all coupled with, is like the internet gave everybody, I was talking about this yesterday, the internet gave everybody a fucking voice, and not everybody needs the fucking voice.
No.
Not
no,
everybody
the best
needs it.
And worst, actually, I used to say my party line like 10 years ago, I was like, the best and worst thing about the internet is it gave everyone a voice. And now in 2026, I go, the worst thing about the internet is it gave anyone a voice. Because, like, I think even a lot of, I think most comedians, we can agree, it's like, yeah, sorry. It's awesome to have this immediate thing to market yourself and get your shit out there. But even, like, a lot of comedians, even a lot of successful comedians, I see them just completely abandoning it. Or they, like, hand their shit over to just an intern to just promote shows. And they're not even doing content or reels. They're just, I just want to fucking do shows. It's just like, you see a lot of people like, get me to my show. I don't even look at my phone for anything besides texts. I don't have socials on my phone. That to me is like the dream as a comedian, is to get to that point where I could afford to do such a thing.
Yeah, it's annoying having to manage your daily online presence in order to be able to get on what you really want to do, which is go in front of 80 to 150 people and do 15 minutes of jokes.
I wish my ego would allow me to only need 80 to 150 people. I wish my ego was pared down enough that I didn't enjoy being on social media. Mm. I still do. For as much of a cesspool as 99% of it is, like, there's something about the dumb way I'm wired, it doesn't completely annoy me or make me hate my life to still go on there.
Mm-hmm.
I compartmentalize tons of it, but it is also the thing where, back to my point, is, you know, I just see children baiting adults or baiting underpaid retail workers, and it's like,
Just like the people who do, like, I hate, like, that shit that's like, it's become real popular on, like, Twitter and what's the Threads, like, where people are like, like, I know no one cares, but I'm 80 days sober. Dude, you're the 900th fucking person who tweeted the same fucking thing. You're right. Nobody gives a shit. Nobody fucking cares.
I think without knowing anything about sobriety like that, I just think, like, you know, some people need to put it out there and celebrate it, I guess. But and also, like, I've never remembered this time in human history this many young and old people have gotten sober before. Not a bad thing.
No.
I'm saying that, like, that's awesome, but it is a wild, fascinating turn of events.
I am just happy a lot of people are doing it without AA.
because, well, you know how I got through rehab is he signed up to be my fucking sponsor because I was like, I am not doing AA, dude. Fuck this.
So yeah. I don't. So like, Jeremy, you're Jordan's sponsor. How? So basically, what you're holding him accountable to staying?
Yeah.
But I don't know why I'm talking to him about you. No. But
yeah. No. The idea of it is like, you know, I am. An AA sponsor is somebody that grooms you for sex. But so basically, I was just making sure.
And Jordan, here we are, 10 years later.
Jordan was keeping his butthole clean and his self-esteem low enough so that he could get a boner when I ate his ass.
So how long ago were you in rehab?
I went in June 2nd and got out October 2nd.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats,
I was only supposed
to... I know this was not a long ago development, but right. good on you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, like, that was like the whole... Like, everything was falling apart. My parents were like, all right, you can come back home and get your shit together, but you're going to rehab first. So I tried every fucking avenue I could to get out of it. About 2 weeks left, I was like... Looks like I'm going to rehab.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. And again, I like having a few. I don't view it as problematic, but I think a big portion of it is you learn you're not allowed to do shit on all your, it can't all be all your, on your own terms when shit gets out of control. Am I wrong about that?
No, no, absolutely correct. I mean, like, that's, I've always done shit on my own terms, and I'm still doing it on my own terms to some degree, but, like, rehab was good for me in the sense that it put a lot of shit in perspective. Like, you didn't realize how much you were fucking around, and you were actually fucking the people around you, and you didn't care, you didn't know, whatever.
Yeah.
And when you get on the other side of that, I'd say like a month in, you're like, fuck, dude. Like, shit. I was taking fucking Percocets, Xanax, and drinking a fucking fifth of tequila on a Tuesday. And like, I could.
What is Taco Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tequila, you're not going to drink tequila on Wednesday.
And I used to live right on the same street as Luchita's. Oh, it was the best, dude. Yeah. It's the best.
Let's talk about anything else right now. I think, Jordan, I don't want this to be a relapse episode. Well, here's, not to cut you off completely.
No, you're good.
Here's the $1 million content. You could go back to rehab and rage bait everyone else in there.
Oh, dude.
Be a sober rage baiter. Which,
dude,
is, I can't think of a worse person to be.
It would be fucking awful.
Yeah, just be like, oh, no tokens needed here, buddy. Yeah. What's your for heroin? Gay.
Yeah, well, dude, my favorite was the people who were there for weed. I was like, grow the fuck up, will you? That is not... masturbation is a bigger addiction than fucking weed.
You're,
dude,
for real, Bob Saget in Cool Runnings. In fucking Half Baked.
Cool Runnings. Bob, you dead?
The classic weed movie starring Dave Chappelle and Jim Brewer. Cool Runnings. Yeah, Half Baked. He's like, I suck dick for cocaine. You ever suck dick for weed?
That's an addiction.
No, but I've sucked dick for bobsleigh.
I mean, snow's right there. Like, it's a cocaine movie. It's clearly, it's all a thin veiled euphemism for cocaine.
It is.
But like rehab, dude. Like, it would be like, I was talking about this on an episode not long ago, where it was like, one of the things I found funny is like, addicts, especially when they're getting clean, dude, they'll fucking flip out about anything.
Yeah.
And this one dude. And it's like, it's always some kind of stupid fucking mix-up, but this one dude flipped the fuck out because one of his shirts went missing. You know, and that sucks, you know, whatever. And he had a kid, and he ends up going out, and he comes back. He was my little brother, so it was like, he came back drunk, and I was trying to talk him into staying, not leaving, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the next day, one of my best buds in rehab comes out to me, Dominic, and he goes, I found Keith's shirt in my shit. And I'm just like, dude.
Well,
did he flip out that much over his shirt, or
well, clearly
was it
not
his kid?
It wasn't about, yeah.
Yeah, it was,
clearly
it was
wasn't
much
about
bigger
the shirt
than that, but
I like,
so funny.
I like to think that his sobriety completely hinged upon that shirt and you ruined it.
I used to be so afraid of how my jokes and just my ball busting affected other people at a young age. like we'll say like young adult age.
Okay.
And this is serious. I've never admitted this to anybody, and it's the most egomaniacal fucking thing in the world. Where I wasn't even like a savage ball buster. I was always like super nice. Like I was always, I wanted everyone to feel
but
the best.
But you can crack a joke.
Otherwise, why the fuck would people want to be around, right?
Right.
And I would be so afraid that I would say something to somebody who was unhinged and I would end up like in their suicide note or something. So the fact that I somehow got past that and do comedy now and to surround myself with some of the people that I do is wild to me. But I had that, there was that thing where you're like, I literally looked in the mirror and go, you really overestimate how much anybody is ever thinking about you that you would
right?
think, you would think you would call somebody, you know, Smelly John, and then they would go home and they would kill themselves. By the way, I never call anyone Smelly John. That's brutal. That's fucking brutal. But I'm just trying to think of just without bringing up actual names, because the only people I know that are gonna be listening are people I know, but whatever. And I had to get over that. That's a crazy.
I have bad news for you, Mr. Pants.
Yes. You're already in his suicide note.
No. So do you remember that Yelp review you wrote of an Applebee's 5 years ago?
Oh no!
The manager killed him.
Store 118. Oh man!
You were just trying to be a silly goose, and now a woman is dead.
All I wanted to do was create art, and look at the hell that I've wrought. Look at the misery that I have brought upon. Like, I think I got kicked off Yelp for like the third time a few months ago, and then my one friend goes, "What is Foursquare not available for you to troll people on?" Dude? And I was like, "I go, I can't do it on Google reviews because I can't have my Google account fucking
asked. Yeah, your
asked.
Name is...
it's the one thing I have to take seriously because my bar is on Google reviews too. And also...
Your website,
everything. I wish I was that unhinged to just go off and make wacky Google reviews. And for people that aren't familiar with this, because why would you fucking know this? I just do like joke Yelp reviews, and I never did any Yelp reviews that weren't like massive corporate chain.
So funny.
Like I wasn't going around and like shitting on Urban Twine or like making up wackadoo shit about Momocho or any pick any independent
or something.
Mom and pop shop. And then it was never like to my point about trolling, it didn't even feel like trolling. Like I felt like I was trying to actually do something. Use it as a medium to be way too artsy fartsy about it.
Yeah.
Because again, I can't stand all this access to tools to show people how funny you're trying to be, and then people just opt for the lowest
hanging fruit.
Not even in a way that's like funny stupid. It's like you just walking up to someone in a Walmart and shoulder bumping them, or it's like that Jack Doherty guy. Are we familiar with that kid?
Yeah.
That actually is what really the crux for the whole thing, where I was like watching some of his material and I go, this kid's dad either has to be some super powerful entertainment lawyer, but there's no way this kid's self-made and he has all this money and he's going around baiting kids into fighting his 400-pound bodyguard. And like,
yeah.
There's got to be like a Raytheon parent behind this.
Yeah. Because
there's no way he's... Otherwise, he would have been unalived months ago.
Well, there's that, and there's also the fact that it seems like he's built his entire empire to convince younger girls to start OnlyFans like as soon as they turn 18 and then give him a cut.
Well, how old is he?
He's like in his 20s.
Oh, because, I mean, he looks like he's 13 years old.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure is part of the reason, I understand why, 14-year-old white dumbass kids see him and they see a hero or they see like a path to being famous too. And it's
he looks like a child that made it.
Yeah. I mean, the nothing about him trying to get women when they're of age to start OnlyFans shocks me. That's fucking gross.
It's the grossest part of his whole thing.
I mean, and again, it's one of those things where I don't ever want to research any of these people too much because I'm 46 years old. And I don't need to know. I always want to be aware of the zeitgeist or whatever's going on, but I don't really need to know granular information about Jack fucking Doherty.
Right.
You know, a dude that got other teenagers to fight Andre Arlovsky. a retired MMA fighter in public. Then when I saw that, I think my MMA fandom kicked in. I go, either this guy's in on the work,
mm-hmm.
or he realizes children are trying to fight him and he's holding back with everything he has. But the whole thing sucked.
Yeah, it's that always bothers me when it's when you can tell.
And I just lifelong wrestling fan. I mean, you are as well, and you are mm-hmm. as well. I just was like, there's no way a dude that's trained 8 to 10 hours a day his entire life to beat people to a pulp is somehow now showing restraint when being attacked in public. Mm-hmm. So. All that is to say is I hope if it was a work, he got paid handsomely to be a part of it because it sucked.
Yeah.
Have you seen those, like those rage bait, the guys who rage bait scammers? Like they'll, I forget the one, there's
like
one
Ben
dude.
Ben Palmer.
What's that?
There's Ben Palmer who he's a comedian that like his show is a lot of like, he'll get called by scammers and he'll like turn the tables on them. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really good.
He's pivoted. He started doing like the fake customer service responses and now he's pivoted into like exposing MLM schemes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He's like, you know, I think Andy Elliott's people called him and he had a great bit where he, you know, he flipped it on him and stuff. But I think my discontent still lies a lot in, not to sound too artsy-fartsy and high-minded about it, it's like there's just this whole generation of young people that aren't trying to make anything new.
Yeah. Right.
It extends beyond comedy in content creation. It's just...
Well, there's this whole resurgence in Jackass, too. And, like, that is, like, for our generation, that's one thing. You know, it was, I mean, I hate to use this term for Jackass, but it was avant-garde, if you will. You know what I mean?
100%.
Like they, nobody was doing that shit. And like now you have kids like, and those, you know, they say they're professionals. Yeah, they're professional fuck-ups. Like they know how to fall, whatever. But like you have these kids who like go out and do this shit. It's like you're not Steve-O, dude. Like he's one in a million like that lived through some of this shit. You're going to die.
Sure. I think with Jackass and CKY stuff, though, those guys were all like professional skateboarders for the most part.
Right.
And yeah. They were like, you know, they were like stuntmen. And it was literally impressive, the commitment to self-harm in a way.
Yeah.
And I mean, to unfortunately, nothing like that's ever going to be massively successful without copycats everywhere.
Right.
You know, and I think that's true of anything where there's... Bless you. I think you did one of everything there. So just ran the gamut.
Everything expelled.
It's just... You know how there's bands... I'll put it to you like this. You know how there's bands where you don't hate the band, but you know, you're not listening to them, but you don't... When you hear the band's name or you hear the music, you're just kind of like, ah, yeah, okay, fine. But when you just realize what their fan base is made of, you're like, I wish these people, this band had never existed. I wish they never discovered instruments. Why was I'm trying to think of a band.
Ghost.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I kind of like Ghost, but I get your point.
We'll say aesthetic.
Like, we'll call Social Distortion.
Gogol
Bordello. Mm. Clutch. There's certain
Clutch is
Flogging
good.
Molly. And by the way, first two Clutch albums go real fucking hard. But my point is, like, there's just certain fan bases of stuff that make the actual thing completely loathsome.
Mm.
I agree, 100%.
Which is not really anything towards the point of why I came in, but
I would say I would say the Grateful Dead, but Bob Weir just died, so let's not get into that for their sake.
Now. I am not fucking kidding you. The Touch of Grey is the only Grateful Dead song I've ever heard in my life. I can't think of a single other one.
If I've heard one, I don't know it.
Yeah, it's like that's just a band where like. They have probably the greatest logo of any band ever, and I'm astonished how much I've never been compelled in my life to try to listen to one more Grateful Dead song
because they all sound the fucking same. Right?
No, it's not. It's not even like a Judgment Fish.
Yeah,
that's the band I'm thinking of. Mm. That's no disrespect to Social D because I like Social D, but Grateful Dead. I'm just like, it's just my whole life. I've been here for almost 50 years, and it's just like, yeah, it's Grateful Dead. I've got a whole machine. I could listen to any Grateful Dead song ever. I'm just not interested.
Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good on that.
There are people in my family that are big Deadheads. So
there's clearly a lot in the world. I mean,
yeah.
It's That's just not one of them.
No. You know, it was like one of the best rage baiting jackass things. It was like one of my all time favorites was when they're on the golf course and he's fucking blowing the horn every time the dudes go to take a swing. And then like the guy's like, if you do it one more time, and he does it, and he shoots a ball at him. He walks over to the dude and he walks over to Knoxville and he's like, why are you doing that? He's like, I have bursitis. He goes, so that means you have to blow a horn. He goes, and he goes, it helps.
But even like that, like
he's trying to be funny there.
Exactly.
It's in the service of being funny, and I'm not here to blanketly try to be comedy cop. There's definitely things I've laughed at where someone is being provocative or antagonistic, right. And it's funny. But the bigger problem is anyone under the age of 30 that I've seen try to do it in the scope of social, like of TikTokism, is I fucking want you to die.
Have you ever seen any of the ones where they get rocked? Like, that's the best shit, dude, where it's like, and then they, like, oh, I'm going to sue you. Dude, no, you were asking for that. Like, you were asking for it.
This is, okay, and this is the other thing that drives me fucking bananas that I can't stand. And I hate it because I don't like becoming this guy. I know this is a hate podcast, but is fucking First Amendment auditors. Have you stumbled into that dark hole of the internet?
Oh, wait. Are you talking about the guys who, like, they'll film people?
They'll just film people in public.
Yeah. Because they can. I was going to bring that up, too. Go ahead.
Which, like, and of course, you know, like, it starts as they'll go into a police station and they'll needle fucking cops and, like, paid, you know, city workers, because who would ever get mad about, you know, trolling cops? It's like, right. Okay. But I'm also like, okay, but why are you doing this? Like, no, I get
because
why
I
you're
can.
Doing
that's
it.
Their whole thing. It's because I can.
Because you can. Okay, so you're gonna bug everyone at work. You're gonna bug the lady that's just working in dispatch because you can. And then of course they just post up outside of like stores, you know, on the street. So then of course it's just well-meaning people working at a fucking Crumble Cookies. Like, so why would you say you're here? And it's always like, oh, because I can. Why do you have a problem with it? And it's like that thing. And I'm like, yeah, violence works, and violence sometimes should be allowed. I'm sorry.
Sometimes violence is the answer. That's why I don't agree with any of my pacifist friends. I'm like, I don't know. So, dude, sometimes it's called for.
I mean, I'm
not a violent person.
I'm not either, and I'm not about that life. I'm definitely past the age of trying new drugs and fist fighting. But,
yeah,
you know, there is something just like, yeah, dude. There's a reason I'm a pacifist, and there's a reason I don't piss off a lot of people, because I got shit kicked out of me a couple times.
Sure, don't feel
clearly
good.
It worked. You know, I got bullied as a kid like anybody else, and sorry, some people need a dose of that for some character building.
Honestly, like sometimes it's just the right response to a situation. For example, in Denver, there was I don't know if it still exists, but there was a place called the Ogden Theater. Where for hardcore shows, they would have people that like wanted to just push into each other by the stage on the bottom. And then they had a riser where there was like a second pit, and that is for people who wanted to dance. So I didn't know that, and I was trying to dance in the bottom pit, and I got rocked in the face a couple of times. What did I do? I moved and noticed, oh, I was doing it wrong, and problem solved. Yeah. I wasn't mad that I got punched. Clearly, I needed to be let know, hey, you're doing it wrong.
You didn't know the rules. You quickly learned them and adjusted accordingly.
Yeah.
That's like, by the way, two separate levels of moshing with no guardrails or anything.
That's wild.
That's a jackass stunt.
It was so much fun. I was sick of it all.
Sick of it all?
Oh, yeah. Hell
what
yeah.
year?
God, 2002, 2003.
So like call to arms around that? Yeah, hell yeah, dude.
But that is a wild injury, gruesome injury waiting to happen for somebody. I mean, that's how Rick Rude's career ended, because they had two separate platforms, and then Sting came over the top rope, and you know, Rude's supposed to break his fall, and he did, but he landed directly where the two levels changed, and you know, he
fucked up his neck, right?
Yeah, he couldn't wrestle ever again. Moshing,
London policy.
Yeah, moshing is. I put my time in with that. Also, talk about something I'm definitely aged out of.
Yeah, I am.
I made it, you know, especially because. Oh, how old are you?
I'm 45.
So we're all the same age, right?
I'm 38.
Yeah, okay. So after 35, everyone's 43.
Oh,
yeah.
100%.
So, like, I made it through my 30s when, like, crowd killing was definitely becoming normalized. And I was like, you know, we had a good run. All my teeth are in my mouth. My nose is still in its right place. I'm
going to retire.
Feel good about the work I've put out there. I feel like my legacy is cemented enough. I don't need someone the size of Miles Garrett fucking spin kicking me.
Yeah.
Like, I still, like, I'll, you know, I'll go to fests, like, and it's within minutes. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the stamp on my hand is still wet. You'll just see, like, 14 dudes with, like, walking around like this with, like, fucking towels and ice over their nose. And I'm like, I go, the first band hasn't even finished sound checking yet. Like, what are you guys doing? What are you doing?
That's fucking wild.
What are you trying to prove out here, dog? Like, I don't know. Yeah,
that's why I'm glad I never, like, got into hardcore. Like, I was into hardcore punk, you know, and, like, those mosh pits were fine for me, you know, like, but, like, and I've been in my fair share of fights in pits, but, like, that shit where it's like, you're just sitting there trying to enjoy the show and somebody's going roundhouse kick you in the face. Fuck that, dude.
And then it's like, to this day, I mean, like, you know, I started going to hardcore shows in the 90s, and I saw hardcore moshing evolve to whatever it is now, which just seems like it's 95% crowd killing.
Yeah.
Or whatever,
yeah.
Which is okay. Whatever. I'm not even judging that. But it's the thing where it's like, it still baffles me where I'll just see a dude just get absolutely mauled, and then he just pops up.
Like, yeah, good one, dude. It's like indie wrestlers, dude. They're like, I'm not hurt.
Where I'm like, I go, I lived this life for 30 years, and for some reason, it's still baffling to me. Like, you know, like, I've got my shit rocked, but it's still like, I didn't get up and be like, good one, brother.
Well, like, like, back in the day, we used to pick each other up, like, when you fell, like, unless somebody was being a fucking asshole.
Right, right.
And, like, like, anymore, I don't see that. I'm just like, oh, that person's gonna die.
Actually, you know what? I blame hardcore for AEW. And this is why. Because hardcore taught you to no sell super kicks. So it's,
I'm starting a hardcore band called the Young Bucks now.
Like, every dude in the pit's Ultimate Warrior.
Dude, that's a music video, just, dude. That's
just stand right back up and start shaking your head. Yeah.
He did have a banging song.
Jeff Edge just refuses to go down. I'm trying to think of the most the stupidest hardcore guy name that's not a real guy. Right. Simone Rob just came off the top rope. How's this man upright?
Jimmy Blades.
But, like, I mean, going back, I, like, shout out to Simone Rob. Even back, like, you know, 2001, too, like, crowd deterrent shows, they were, like, walked so Bad Luck 13 shows could run, where, like, they had motherfuckers bringing washers and dryers to their shows. And, like, it was, like, Carrot Top. Like, with priors type behavior, where, like, dudes were just like,
hardcore flea market.
Yeah, man, it's like, you guys had a tube TV, bring it in here, throw it in, like,
fuck it, you know,
throw it in someone's head, dude. I love them. I love that. I mean, I say that with nothing but love and respect. But yeah, I was like, I remember, like, I had my emo hardcore band. We felt really good about it, and, like, one of my friends, you know, came to the show super late, and he goes, I just went to Youngstown to see a crowd deterrent show, and my life is different now. And I was like, what happened? He goes, someone threw a fucking washing machine at another guy. And I go, all right, I give up. I was like, I wasn't trying to keep pace with that kind of behavior, but all right.
I'm still down here at level 3. That's level 10 shit, man.
I don't, you know, I'm still trying to write lyrics about heartache and cursive. What cursive writing sounds like screaming, but I don't think I'm ready for fucking violent.
Oh, you weren't
music.
Writing songs about Tim Kasher.
Yeah.
That's for all you. That's for all you. Everybody above 35. That joke.
Yeah. Wait, was that? Oh, that's from Kurt, the guy from Cursive. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure all the music and all the lyrics I wrote in 2001 have aged wonderfully. Yeah. I'm sure, I'm not embarrassed about any of those at all.
Dude, I came across, I don't know why I saved these, but I came across lyrics that I wrote in like 05, like when I, like amidst my first girlfriend and everything. And like writing song, I'm like, dude, you wanted to be Matt Skiba more than fucking Matt Skiba wanted to be Matt Skiba. It's like the cheesiest vampire shit in the fucking world.
The worst thing are you, and you're wearing an Alkaline Trio.
Oh, I still own it.
Yeah, and I love Alkaline Trio, but I think the worst breakthrough for any band that wasn't the Misfits in the early 2000s was thinking they could just adopt this spooky persona. And I'm like, no, you're like singing about like how your like 21-year-old girlfriend won't like return your calls. It's like Glenn was fucking singing about zombies and goblins and shit, dude.
He was
like,
talking about fucking coming in Jackie's mouth.
Yeah, walk the walk, motherfucker. Yeah, you're talking about JFK's head getting blown off and Jackie sucking dick. Talking about tree branches weeping like your soul, you fucking dork.
Sheer texted me a couple months ago, and he screenshotted Blue Carolina came on. He goes, I listened to this song, and now I'm gay.
And you know what? That's a great experience. Like that's all I want out of like the listening experience these days is like I want to like not be able to listen to that song for 3 weeks because I thought about an ex, and that's like a transforming experience. But I'm not gonna go get the swoopy Davey Havoc 2004 haircut at this point. Mm-mm. And like try to like dust off, you know, the Timu Peter Steele persona.
Fire, though, dude.
I loved it.
The new AFI record was fucking awesome.
Dude, AFI. Okay, here's my one AFI bit is, you know, because now you know, like, he looks dusty now.
Yeah, like, that's a good.
I'm sorry. Like, I love him to death, but I go, why does he look like dryer lint? Like,
why does he look like a fucking hippie? Like, you know, a cult leader?
Which, like, I get it. Like, he's clearly a guy that, like, values reinvention and evolution, and I didn't even think it was a bad look, but my Davey Havoc is, like, the hot goth Miss Murder Davey Havoc.
Yeah.
That's like my chief wahoo. Like, that's like, I look at like when people talk about current Davey Havoc, it's like the Cleveland Guardians of goth. I'm like, no. I was like, give me Davey 2004 Davey Havoc. Like my father taught me.
Right.
That's the Davey. Like that's the way I look at it. Like that's the paradigm of David.
Well, it's like
he's now called David Havoc.
Is he?
He's like, no,
he's
not, I call him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now, no, because he looks like he's a dad.
Yeah, yeah. No.
But like well, when I saw them,
he's in his fucking 50s, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
he looks fantastic.
Be.
Yeah.
But he, like, I was. Because I from when Jade joined the band, that's where I'm kind of like, I like Art of Drowning and everything, but like I fall off after that. I like the real early shit. But this new record, like when I saw them in 06 or 07, the oldest song they played was God Called in Sick Today. And that left a real bad taste in my mouth because I wanted to hear, you know, my mom won't let me get a Mohawk, shit like that.
Yeah.
But like I get it because they were at that time was when they were blowing the fuck up. So
that's a band that like spooky persona, they've had it, they were like the first band to do that
in the 90s. Yeah,
yeah, but yeah. The name of the band is A Fire Inside.
Yeah,
that's not spooky.
No,
it's not like, you know, jack-o'-lanterns covered in blood. That would be a better name for AFI, but it's not a great monogram.
No, it doesn't work as well.
J-O-L-C-I-B. That sounds
fuck
like a Scarhead chorus. That sounds like a Scarhead chorus, really, which would be sick. That's all the material I have about Davey Havoc and AFI, I think.
Yeah, but like,
I do
love,
and
like,
I do, but I did, I... AFI in two, I saw them the last time they came through, and they were so good in 2001 off whatever that last EP thing was.
Before Black Sails on the Sunset, not Art of Drowning. What the fuck is it called?
It was the
All Hallows EP.
I Got to Get Out of LA or whatever. But it was so good, I fucking went down to Orlando and saw them on the same tour.
Oh, cool.
It was the show of the year to me.
That's cool.
Like, yeah, it was like honestly seeing like the level of professionalism those guys put into putting on a show was like some Iron Maiden level shit.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah. So, and I love modern day dryer lint David Havoc.
Yeah.
I mean, who
that's
am I
the thing
to judge?
Is that record, I was like, there's no way AFI is putting out a good record. And I heard the single and I was like,
it's good.
Okay, the single's good. I'm going to give the record a shot. And then I was like, this is amazing.
No, it's that band is clearly not. No one's going to push them into the studio to try to make money. Like,
no.
That they're clearly, and it's a, put out good.
All right, guys. All right, guys. This show's called Let the Hate Flow Through You. Not Let Davey Have It Come in Your Mouth.
I thought, am I getting too old to get a Warp Tour? I thought I still had a shot. What else do I hate? All right, what do I hate? What do I hate? Why does every dude under 30 dress and look like an electrician from 1983? Let's start there.
They do.
What
do,
is
they
that
do,
look,
don't they?
Dude?
They do.
They all look like Dahmer.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, like I don't get that like resurgence in like looking like a fucking dork from the 80s. Like I don't get it.
Well, it started with everybody started saying, you know what looks good? Mechanic work shirts. Mm. And then it just evolved from there.
But no one works.
No.
But they want to look like
you know what the you know what the last fucking mechanic work shirt I wore was? My fucking Bouncing Souls True Believers one, man.
The late that, 90s, yeah. Work
that
shirts,
was cool.
Yeah, yeah. Work shirts and bowling shirts fucking ran the roost like in the 90s, but like just the amount of money Carhartt makes off of graphic designers now and outfitting them in what is the least labor-intensive job on earth is wild to me.
Yeah.
Good for them, I think, but like I just feel like, you know, I got to lose a couple pounds, but I feel like everyone should dress like sex could break out at any minute.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
The way I feel about the way you should present yourself to the world.
Well, that's
consensual
why I look
sex.
Like shit.
Jeremy came in and was flashing crack at me. He's fucking full of it.
This well, I'm always flashing crack because I'm bad at pants, and I'm about to do it again because we're coming to get the next guest.
Oh God!
See, I told you. Nice.
See,
oh yeah, that's right. I forgot we have Dwayne coming on. That's fucking rad.
Dwayne Duke.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
What
so,
does he hate? I don't want to spoil that. I don't want to spoil
that. Yeah. No. Right, I don't even.
Not
even
my.
Think I remember.
Not my story to tell.
But no, I mean, just like going back to just like the whole rage baiting scam thing, dude. Like, I don't understand like why, what it is about like oh. I'm going to irritate this person. That's what I'm going for.
I grew up with a little brother. So like, it's like by the age of 13, I think we'd both mutually gotten all of that thing out of us. But
like the, I'm not touching you shit.
Yeah. Like that shit. And I understand why anybody wants to have attention paid to them, but like, you got to do something of value to earn it, in my opinion, online from strangers. Like it's, I think that's what it comes down to for me. It's like, it feels annoying enough to do comedy because I don't know if I feel like at this age I need the attention, but I just need to get shit out of my system.
Right. Absolutely.
And yeah, 100%. It doesn't feel great when you don't get a reception to that. But like, even at a younger age, doing band shit and just doing stuff that involved needing an audience, it always felt bad. It's the only way that I felt like I was a good person about it, because I was always at every point I go, oh God, why do I need this? Like, I have two loving parents and like I have a support system. Why do I need this? Like, why do I need this?
Well, I mean, it is true that like, I mean, you kind of touched on it. It's like everybody wants to be heard, man. Like,
yep.
Now that kind of goes to like what we were saying about the internet is not everybody fucking needs to be heard.
Everyone wants to be heard. Some people need to be beaten.
I think that's more. That's probably the most accurate description. and that's the thing is like that's the corporal punishment, dude. Some people need, the only way some people learn is by a fucking slap in the mouth.
I mean, like through the grace of God, I made it through my childhood. My dad never laid a finger on me. There was probably sometimes he could have just, you know, like just a quick dude. You know, like, I grew up fine. I feel like I'm a well-adjusted adult.
I would say so.
There's some people you see, we all know them, where it's like kind of like, yeah, you needed a smack over the head every once in a while. Just once.
Yeah.
Not anything, just to know, like.
Well, not everybody needs to be beaten. Some people do.
Jeremy, you missed your next t-shirt slogan I'm going to award you. Whereas everybody wants to be loved, some people need to be beaten.
I feel like I need that on a hat.
Dwayne, we got here from there. There's a whole thing that got us. How you doing, buddy?
Okay. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. It's going to be.
I love watching my notes in real time about what we cool runnings. That's a clip. I don't know. I'm not here to tell you how to do your job.
What movie was it? What did we? What was
Half Baked?
Half Baked and Cool. Bob Saget in Cool Running.
Classic mix up.
Yeah.
He was the coach of the Swiss team.
The late great Bob Saget.
Yeah.
Late and great. I had for the one chance I had to see Bob Saget. He was supposed to be on the Traveling Virus tour when that came through Cleveland, but it fell on Yom Kippur. So Saget said no.
No shit.
Yeah. So that was my only shot that I had. But
weird.
Unfortunately. And then he died.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but it could. I got to see Otto and George.
There you go.
So.
I got to see George Carlin, so whatever.
You got to see George Carlin?
07.
That's wild.
That's
one.
The buck. Like that's the one. And he died a year after.
I was about to say I don't remember him being alive that long.
Yeah,
but,
it was 2007.
Okay.
Yep.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah. That's a big one for
me.
Yeah,
I would never shut the fuck up about that one.
It was because it was that last special that came out like right after he died. Like I think it's Life Is Worth Losing is what it's called, or It's Bad For You. It's one of those two. But yeah, it was that tour, and it was just. He was, you could tell he was going, but like he still, it's fucking George Carlin. So it was very cool. Yeah.
That's actually a fun thing you get to experience sometimes is you get to watch some of your favorite comedians go through cognitive decline.
I've been watching it for 10 years.
I was about to say, sometimes you see it happen to people in their 30s, really.
Yeah.
High and dry every Thursday night.
There's two ways this shakes out. You either become a Martin Malloy or a Bill Squire.
But Bill's still healthy as a mule. Just, I've definitely seen some newbies take the stage where I'm like, you need to get checked out.
Okay, wait a second. Now, my favorite rage baiter on the internet right now is Bill Squire for what he does to fucking Marty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Marty baiting is that's an art form.
Just turn off the damn video, Bill.
The one... The one day I opened my fucking Instagram up, and it's like a comment on a post I'd made like a week ago, and it's from Marty, and it just says "gay Jew," and I go, and I think Marty's very funny, but I just go, "There's no way this is coming from him." I go, "It's not." So that was like the joke for like the so. Of course, then I put two and two together. I go. And then Bill goes, yeah, no, I told Marty I needed to see his phone. I go, Marty's not stupid. I go, why would he do that? And he's like laughed.
Well, first of all, you need to adjust your assumptions of the man. Because he is stupid enough to give Bill his phone.
I mean, I sat next to him at 51st Jokes, and I've spent enough time with Marty, but like, I'm watching him open his fucking FanDuel app up every few minutes. And even if I'm not, he's giving me reports and he's like on how much he's losing. And I go, this is a very special person.
Dude, you got to come watch wrestling with me and Shear, because Marty will sit there while we're trying to watch the fucking pay-per-view. My favorite thing he ever did was it was a football game, and he goes, oh, it's 3rd-and-2. They're probably going to get a first down.
In a game no one's watching? Yeah.
I'm
assuming Marty paid zero attention to wrestling at all.
Oh, yeah, no. He asks us questions and then pays no attention. That's fun.
That's Marty in a nutshell for you.
Yeah. We're talking about, for those of you outside of the Cleveland area watching this, like, who's this Marty guy they're talking about? Who's Samoan Rob?
This is an odyssey, man. We've really covered it.
Yeah, we've, it's a very niche Cleveland micro-celebrity references in this podcast.
Nobody brought up Hot Carl. Damn.
We got time.
Hot Carl was not a rage baiter, all right? Hot Carl genuinely just thought screaming and being awful was funny.
Hot Carl is a brand, first of all. He's
a brand.
Also a DJ.
Yeah.
No, did Carl ever do comedy?
Yeah.
It's weird I don't know that. But
yeah,
I
did. The first person that I ever booked to headline a show was Bill Squire. The second person I ever booked to headline a show was Hot Carl.
Wow.
Yeah.
What year is this?
This was 2005.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
I first saw Hot Carl in 2004. He bombed, but it was hilarious because it was so bad. So I wanted to see like a long form of it because I thought it might be like a beautiful disaster.
You really are a hardcore fan. You really are, man. You are a fucking sadist. Most people say, like, I think there's something in there. If I give them, like, 5 more minutes, I could pull it out and be like, nope, I don't see how much further this thing is going to fucking, how much darker it can get and
you
worse.
Just got 5 more minutes.
Carl, how's 30 minutes sound?
Oh, he was down. He was excited, and then he showed up to the show, and so this is like, you know, it's 20 years ago, so it doesn't matter anymore. But this is the second, like, show that we ever had at this spot. The regulars of the bar had really not bought into the concept of there being a comedy show there yet.
Which is pretty common occurrence if you do enough bar shows.
Yeah, but this was like, you know, hey, you're fucking with our DJ time so we can dance with the young girls that come here. But the kitchen staff started heckling Mr. Sunshine, who was the feature act that night. And Hot Carl said, keep your money, dude, I'm out. And he walked. So it was honestly, like, I'm glad that happened because I ended up confronting, like, the leader of the regulars that night, who was a professional boxer, like, actually ready to fight him. And that ended up getting me the respect of the bar.
Good on you.
So the next show was really good, and we ended up getting moved to a weekend because the show ended up doing really good.
Holy
there.
Shit.
Yeah. So sometimes violence story, right? Is the answer. is what I'm trying to say. So, okay, Pants, where can we find you on the internet?
Okaypants.com is my main site, and then I'm okaypants on all socials, which, of course, is Instagram.
Yeah.
You can help me get those TikTok numbers up. We're trying our best at our tender young age of 46 to be a crucial voice on the internet.
Everybody's saying everything is going towards Instagram now, like, again, like, like reels are like now where it's completely.
I just think anything video based is probably
going to be
a safe bet. But
sure.
It just feels any more like clocking into a fucking day job I'm not getting paid for sure. This shit. But whatever. Yeah. I'm still an extremely online person, probably way too much. But you know, give me a follow. I feel like I'm fun.
Yep,
I would say so.
So, Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates rage baiting streamers as much as OK Pants.
No, there is another.
And scene. I won't apologize again. I'm a rampant offender. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep standing up and falling out my face. Drag me to the ring. Another discharge paper. Daniel's in drunkenness. I keep a bruise in my brain and under the punches. And I was meant to take. This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.